Thank you, Stephanie and Scott, and thank you all for giving both Tim and me a few minutes to talk to you and kind of give you a little bit of background about us and kind of why we're running, and then answer your questions. And let me give you a little background on me for those of you who don't know me. I was born and raised in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. My wife is from Crookston, Sandy, and we went to Concordia College in Moorhead. So we are children of northwestern Minnesota, but after spending a few years away in Chicago and D.C., we have now been in Plymouth for about 25 years. We have two teenage, well, actually one of our sons is 20 now, so I feel old, but we had two sons, Thor, who's down at Iowa State, and Rolf, who's a senior at Wayzata High School right now. I've spent most of my adult life in the private sector, and last 20 or so years, I've been self-employed. I used to be an employment lawyer. Now, the last 20 years, I've been doing workplace investigations of harassment and discrimination claims, workplace training to help avoid those harassment and discrimination claims, and some mediations. And then during that time, I served 6 years in the Minnesota House, and my focus in those 6 years was on K-12 education issues. I served on both the policy and the K-12 education finance committee. We had one young son when I started, and we had two by the time I was done, and they both ended up in the public school system. So it was a really important issue for me. I also now serve as a Hennepin County Commissioner. I'm in my third and final term on the Hennepin County Board. And I got into this race, this governor's race, almost a year and a half ago. I think it's about 17 months next week. And we have not stopped moving since the start. It's one of the reasons that I was able to get over a pretty big hump in a primary in a race that no one thought we could win against Tim Pawlenty. But the key to that, along with a good message, was the fact that we were out there, Donna Bergstrom, my running mate, and I, talking to people, talking to literally tens of thousands of Minnesotans. And what we talked about was the fact that we think we need some change in our government right now. We believe that we need a government that is accountable to Minnesotans. We've kind of lost that in our state government the past, I would say even more than the past 8 years. When you look at things like MNLARS, MNsure, child care fraud, elder abuse, and I could go right on down the list, there are things that are happening in government right now that shouldn't be happening. And there's a perception out there that not much is being done about it, and I frankly share that perception. So we are going to hold government accountable to taxpayers, again, state government. And then the other piece is, I think, an issue of culture within our state government agencies. There's an attitude right now, there's a culture, at least in some of our state agencies, that their job is to control and direct and help us all make better decisions about our own lives or our own businesses or our own schools, as opposed to serving us. And the reason we all created government in the first place was to serve us, and we have lost that service attitude in elements of many of our state agencies. And that's a really personal message for people throughout the state of Minnesota. Whether I'm talking about the DNR, whether I'm talking about the Department of Human Services or the Department of Education or Met Council, right on down the list, it's a very personal message for people because they want government to serve them. And we've lost that value, I think, in Minnesota the past decade or two. And that will change when I'm governor. It's what I will wake up every single day to do, to change that culture in government. Specifically on education, since that's why we're all here today, I'm a product of the public schools in Detroit Lakes. My wife is a product of the public schools in Crookston. Her parents are lifelong public school teachers. Our boys are both graduates, or one is soon to be a graduate of Wayzata Public Schools. So we have a lot invested in the public school system. We have skin in the game, and to me, it's one of the most important priorities in the state of Minnesota. And I'll give you a few broad principles about education, because I know we're going to get into more specifics when we get into the Q&A. What I won't do today, I'm not going to make a whole bunch of funding promises to you. That separates me from my opponent. I will not tell you what I think you want to hear. I'm going to tell you what I really think, and I will explain why I think that. And then I will also tell you that I am very open to discuss things, and you might be able to change my mind based upon what you know that I don't know. That's kind of my leadership style. But you'll get exactly what I really think today, and you'll know exactly where I stand, even if it's not always on the same page as you have. Because I think that's something that people are getting tired of in politics, is promise, 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 and then get elected and figure out which promises you can actually keep. I try not to make a lot of promises. Here's what I will tell you, though, some broad principles. We all love to talk about local control, and some actually move forward with that. My very first bill when I was in the legislature as a baby legislator in the House back in 2001 was a mandate elimination bill. We had a really cool name for it. I don't remember what it was now, but I told staff, I said, okay, what I hear from my school board members and my superintendent and my principals is that the number one issue is funding, but the number two issue is we got too many mandates on us. Let us spend what you do send us more freely. Give us more flexibility. So you give me a list of all the mandates we have. And at the time, I think it was just over 100 state mandates on schools. Some of them funded, some of them not. And I said, okay, let's pick out the 10 easiest ones to explain to people where you can make a case without having to give them a 10-minute detailed explanation and see if we can get rid of some of these. And I think we ended up with 6 or 7 of them that were easy to explain because most of them weren't. And it was World War III. Trying to get rid of any of those mandates. And I learned very quickly the only reason a mandate is in law is because some group or interest got it in there and they're going to fight to the death to keep it there. And sometimes it's the teachers union, but sometimes it's other groups, as I learned, because lots of people were interested in this. In the end, we got rid of one mandate. I don't even remember what it was. It was the easiest mandate to get rid of because it got thrown into an omnibus bill. So I recognize how easy it is for us to say we're going to give you more control of the money we send to you and we're going to eliminate mandates, but how hard it is to actually do it. But we will do that. We will make one of the first things I will do after I'm elected is to ask your organization and other education organizations, send us a list of the mandates that are making your job the toughest, that are not allowing you to serve your students the way you want to, and we'll make a big push with your help to get rid of at least some of them. Because local control actually makes sense to me. I think the closer you are to the people, the better decisions you make about what they need and what serves them best. More flexibility with teachers. So every study I've read, or nearly every study I've read, says that the best way to predict whether a kid succeeds in school or not, there's really two things. One is their family, their parents, and number two are the quality of their teachers. There's not a lot government can do about making parents better parents. Maybe there are certain things that could help here or there, but that's really not a role of government. But there are things that government can do to help you all hire and promote and reward the very best teachers. And if there are teachers that aren't that good, and we have had so much success with the teachers that have taught our kids. They have been, by and large, awesome teachers, and I think that's probably true across the state. But the teaching profession is like every other profession. There are some that maybe aren't that good and should be doing something else. And I want to make sure you are able to move those folks on because they're not serving our kids. And then again, reward and move up those who are great at their job. And we kind of tie your hands in many ways. And so I will do everything I can, again, with your cooperation, to give you more flexibility with respect to promoting and celebrating the very best teachers we have in Minnesota. That also goes to giving you more options to hire teachers. And I know that there was some progress made last year, the year before, with respect to teacher licensing. And I'm not sure that that has been implemented the way that everybody intended it to. And that goes back to the culture in some of our state agencies, I think. But whatever we can do to bring more good teachers into the system, we will do. I'll be happy to help you with that. And then I know there's going to be a question about early learning, and my preference is early learning scholarships rather than universal pre-K, which is I see as another mandate on schools. And then, of course, the big issue is the question of funding. And I won't make any promises to you today about increasing this or increasing that or fully funding whatever the definition of that, of anything that is. But what I will tell you is that I will not be making any K-12 education decisions without your input, without your involvement. I am an open door sort of guy. And there are times where we are going to agree and be able to move forward together and I think get big, good things done for our kids. And there may be times where we don't agree. But for me, that won't be a fight. It won't be a battle. It'll be let's sit down and figure out you know, whether there's a spot where we can meet on this issue we don't agree, and then on where we agree, let's move forward and get the job done. So you will be an important part of my administration because I really do appreciate the work you do, and it's one of the most important jobs in Minnesota. So with that, Stephanie, I'm happy to take some questions.
Thank you very much for your opening statement, Commissioner. I'm actually going to combine the first two questions because I think you sort of talked about it in your opening statement. But since 2003, the basic education funding formula has lost considerable ground to inflation. And if it had kept pace with inflation, the formula would be $618 higher today than it is. And so one of the things we wanted to know about your position is, do you support indexing the per pupil formula to inflation? I'm going to also combine that with special education funding. We have spent, school districts have spent over $700 million on regular education funding for the cross subsidy of special education funding. And do you support funding the gap between what schools are required to provide and what they're funded for?
Okay, thanks. So I don't believe we should index funding for anything. I just don't think you should put anything on autopilot in government. I think it shirks our responsibility as legislators or a governor. I think circumstances change where there are times where this might be the most important part of the budget and there might be another time where something else is. So that is not something I'm comfortable with in K-12 education or any other part of government. I think our responsibility is to discuss this every 2 years and make a determination as a government, whether an inflationary increase should happen or something larger or smaller than an inflationary increase can happen. I will tell you, however, that K-12 education funding, I get asked this question all the time, what will be your priorities when it comes to spending money? And my answer is twofold. Number one, K-12 education, it's one of the few things in our Constitution where we are instructed to fund. So that is a priority, and the other for me is to make sure we have the strongest safety net in America for our most vulnerable citizens, something we don't do a very good job of in Minnesota. Despite increasing spending over 50% in the last 8 years, we don't do a particularly good job of taking care of some of the most vulnerable people. I look at what we pay our group home employees or our nursing home employees, and it's shameful. But anyway, you're getting me down a different track here, but we need to learn how to prioritize, and these would be my two funding priorities. With respect to special education, I hear this wherever I go, from whether it's teachers or superintendents or school board members, that this is just a huge burden on our schools and therefore on our teachers and on our kids. And so I am very open to you know, increasing this and trying to fill that gap as best we can. My preference is almost always going to be to put money on the formula and give you as much flexibility in spending that as possible. But if, with respect to special education, it makes more sense to put that money into special education, then I'm very open to that. I will say, though, that when we do that, we also have to have a really difficult conversation about why our special education costs are increasing at such a crazy rate in this state. And, you know, I know how difficult that conversation is because I also carried a bill when I was a baby, stupid legislator that said we're going to make it easier to remove disruptive students from the classroom. And holy cow, that was, I thought the mandate bill was tough, but that was really tough because you get some special education issues in there and parents are very passionate about that. But we do have to look at that. You know, the fact that there are some areas where we are exceeding the federal mandate, do we really need to do that? And I think we ought to look at what every other state in the country is doing and see if anybody's doing it better than we are and in a different way, and we should consider that. So, yes, I'd be very open to that, but I think it has to be part of a bigger discussion.
Thank you. Local property taxes provide about 21% of the revenue for Minnesota school districts. While school boards have limited authority to levy taxes, the majority of local property tax revenue comes from voter-approved referendums. Under Minnesota's education funding and property tax system, districts with more commercial industrial property are able to spread out property taxes and reduce the burden on their homeowners. Do you support increasing operating referendum equalization to address these inequalities?
Yes, I would be open to that as well. And this kind of comes from firsthand experience as a legislator. So I represented Western suburbs, lived in Plymouth, but represented Western suburbs. And when I started the finance needs of my district were quite diverse. Obviously, I didn't have any rural districts, but I had Orono, I had Wayzata, I had Robbinsdale, I had Osseo, and I had Hopkins, and maybe a piece of Rockford too at that time. And those very different needs in those different districts, and frankly, equalization was extremely important. It's something that we're a little bit unique with in Minnesota. I think we do it better than a lot of states, but I'm if there is a need to better equalize, and if we need to pump some money into that, I'd be willing to do that.
Under current law, an operating referendum is limited to a maximum of 10 years. Renewal of an existing operating referendum must be approved by the voters, even if it is at the same level as previously approved. Do you support allowing locally elected school boards to renew an existing operating referendum by a majority vote of the school board?
You're not going to like my answer to this, but it's no, I don't support that. And I recall, because I was in the legislature at the time when the state took over a much larger portion of education funding and we eliminated the state general education levy. And a lot of that discussion was, okay, the state is going to move in and cover more of this, but we want to make sure that the taxpayers have ultimate authority, at least for the larger levy decisions. And I still feel that's important. And I know that that is going to be contrary to saying that I want to give you local control, but to me, that's a really important piece of what we do. I actually think we should have the same thing with other local units of government, and we should be consistent about that. I don't think it's fair that you have to do that and city councils or county boards don't, but that's a different fight to have.
Thank you. The Minnesota Department of Education recently announced that 123 schools were awarded a school safety grant as a result of the $25 million that was included in the bonding bill approved last session. The department noted that 1,187 applications totaling $255.5 million were received, more than 10 times the funding available. What proposals will you offer to ensure safe and secure learning environments for all of our students and staff?
So part of this is a money issue. I recognize that. And again, I will always go back to my preference is what we're going to spend on education at the state level. I would prefer to send to you in the most flexible way rather than saying you have to spend it on this. But I also recognize with respect to safety as a dad of a kid in a really big school, you know, we have to address this one separately because it is such an important issue to Minnesotans. And so I'm very open to spending more on this specific piece if we need to. Again, I'd prefer to just put it on the formula, but I know that there will probably be a push to do this in the legislature, so I will support that. I actually think that putting some of the school safety grant into the bonding bill, I think there was an attempt to do that in the last session. I think that's a good idea because you are, by and large, talking about long-term capital projects that affect, you know, really in the case of this, that affect the entire state and the school kids of the entire state. So I would be very open to doing that. I think that there are things that we can do to make the school safety levy more flexible for all of you, what you spend it on and how you spend it, and am willing to support that.
Thank you. You touched on this question, but I'm just going to let you reiterate or expand on your comments from earlier. Minnesota offers an array of early childhood and pre-K programs. What is your vision for early childhood and pre-K programming for Minnesota's youngest learners?
So my preference is a scholarship program. So obviously you all know this, the big debate the last few years has been whether it's universal pre-K in our public schools or whether it is a scholarship program. And I support the scholarship program. And I support it strongly because you can look at a lot of research on this, and it's very important what happens with kids before they go into kindergarten. But I support that track because of a couple reasons. Number one, it actually focuses on the families that need the help the most. I don't believe that the taxpayers should be subsidizing pre-K for my kids because we didn't need that help. it was expensive and we had to set aside money for it, but we could afford it. And to me, that just, it doesn't make any sense. So let's focus it on the families that can afford quality pre-K. And then, frankly, the bigger reason for me is that it gives power and control to parents. It gives them more choices rather than saying, if you want pre-K, if you want this subsidy, or if you want it free, depending upon where they fit on the scale, you have to send your kids here. And my preference is, no, you could send your kids here. That might be the best option for you. But you could also take that money and send them here, here, or here. You figure out which one works best for you. And that kind of fits my philosophy in general about people who are receiving some sort of benefit or subsidy from the government. Healthcare is a great example. If you're receiving a healthcare subsidy, rather than saying you have to be on this particular program, which is what we do in Minnesota, let's do with what a lot of other states do and say, we're going to give you that money and you can use it to be in this particular program, or you can go out in the market and spend it on something that fits your family's needs better. That philosophy, I think, fits in with pre-K, and that's the direction I would go.
Thank you. Do you support vouchers, expanded tax credits, or other taxpayer subsidies for non-public schools? If yes, should non-public schools that receive taxpayer funding be required to comply with state mandates, be held accountable for how taxpayer dollars are spent, and be open to all students?
So I do support school choice of some sort, whether it is tax credits or something else. I think tax credits are actually the better way to go. I think the realistic path forward on that is not some massive voucher system in Minnesota. Politically, that's not going to happen anytime soon. But at least targeted tax credits for parents in schools where they feel that their kid is not being well served. Because it's an option that I have as a parent because we can afford it, but it is an option that many parents don't have. And I do believe that if you are going to get a tax credit, for example, to send your kid to a private school, then they, at least some of the mandates they should have to comply with. Certainly any mandate regarding testing, if we want to measure, I think that's an important mandate that they comply with. But, you know, my focus would be rather than on saying the private schools have to now comply with the 100 mandates we have in the state, let's start actually eliminating mandates on everybody, including the public schools, so that we can, you know, give you the power to do what you need to do across the board in Minnesota.
Thank you. Minnesota is facing a growing shortage of teachers, especially teachers of color and teachers in certain subject areas. What actions do you propose to address the teacher shortage and specifically to increase the pool of teachers of color?
So I mentioned this before that I think there was some limited work done on this in the last session, or it might have been a session ago. I've heard from a lot of people who are involved in that. I know AMSD was involved in that work, but I've heard from at least some people involved in that that they don't believe that the Department of Education or whatever state agencies in charge of this is actually implementing it the way it was intended. That's part of the problem we have in government right now, and so it should be. But I think that's a step in the right direction. The more flexibility we can give to you as administrators and school board members to find more teachers, to find more quality teachers, whether they're teachers of color or otherwise, is what I'm going to be looking at. And so it's licensure issues. It's also different methods to pay teachers. I know we had the QComp bill way back when I was in the legislature. I don't know if that is even still in place or if schools are using it effectively or not. But to me, the more flexibility we can give to you to entice, to recruit different people who you believe will teach your kids well, the better.
Thank you. This is the last question.
Okay.
Thousands of Minnesota students and families are choosing to opt out of one or more of the high school MCA exams because they do not feel that the tests are meaningful. Yet school districts are held accountable for those results. And currently, in the way that state law is currently written, unlike other states that allow some more flexible testing, the state of Minnesota does require public schools to administer the MCAs. Do you support reforming the state assessment system to provide more flexibility for students to take assessments that will more accurately measure college or career readiness and measure accountability?
Sure. I don't know exactly where that would go, but if there are better ways to measure the readiness of our kids for college than what we have in place. I'm very open. I mean, that would be another example where I would try to work with you guys to figure out how do the boots on the ground believe that we could better measure this. And, you know, I kind of like the MCA because it was created by Minnesota, educators to measure where our kids are. But if there are better ways of doing it, I am absolutely open to that and willing to work with you guys on that.
Thank you very much. With that, we would if you'd like to make a closing statement,
Sure.
We would really appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I don't really have anything to add other than to thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing. I have said that I've served in the legislature and I've served on the county board, and I have told people many, many times that the hardest job in politics is being on a school board, because the consequences of your decisions are so huge, and you're dealing with people's kids, and it makes them very emotional about those decisions that you make. So thank you so much for the work you do, and I look forward to working with you after November. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you.
You
so much. With that, we're ready to adjourn the meeting. If I have a motion to adjourn, second, all in favor, and have a wonderful weekend.